Welcome back, everybody.
Thanks for joining us with our family home evening.
Charlotte, why don't you come on in and make yourself at home on the sofa underneath that piece of wall art with the words live, laugh, love printed on it.
I can't even play this game.
I embroidered it myself.
Live, laugh, love.
Dear listeners, you'll be so excited to know that our brother Casey has joined us for family home evening tonight. Welcome, Casey.
Welcome, Elder Anderson.
Thank you, sisters. Thank you.
I think it is important, and I feel like this is something that we've glossed over a little bit on our, you know, our funny intro where we talk about weird shit that's in a Mormon house. But I feel like we need to really give some respect and reverence to the funeral potatoes.
Yes.
I feel like we haven't talked about that enough, and, you know, there's not really a better food source, in my humble opinion. It's cheesy, it's carby.
Is there sour cream in there?
Yes.
Yeah.
Crunchy, buttery.
It'll give you a heart attack. I always thought that they were called funeral potatoes because we always got them at a funeral, so we just named them funeral potatoes. But it's actually that they will give you a heart attack because it's so bad for you.
They will lead to your funeral, yes.
Yes, exactly.
As we were just describing the ingredients in there, I was like, maybe that's why they're called funeral potatoes, and it had never occurred to me. So I'm glad we're all on the same page.
Right?
I remember Grandma's always had like a buttered cornflake topping on it, mm-hmm. which just gives you extra heart attack.
Yes.
Yeah.
You actually melt butter, toss them in cornflakes, and put them on top, and then put them in the oven.
Yeah. Oh, so good.
So good.
I tried to make one today because I was so excited, Casey, that you were going to be on our podcast with us, and I failed miserably.
They weren't terrible. They
weren't Grandma's.
Better. No, well, they never will be.
No, that's true. They never will.
Ever again.
No one's funeral potatoes are as good as their grandma's funeral potatoes.
It's true.
Facts. All right, so we need to get this out there. This is
disclaimer.
Our
disclaimer.
This is our, I don't know, 7th or 8th or something episode. And, you know, if you've been listening to us, we just get drunk and talk out of our asses.
Yeah!
Woo! We just say whatever we want. So, we're thinking it might be in our best interest to have, like, a little, you know, section of our podcast where we talk about the mistakes we've made in the past. So, some kind of a correction thing.
Not just the mistakes we made in our lives, but things that we said that are incorrect.
On the podcast, yes, thank you. Thank you for clarifying. I've actually only had, well, 2 glasses of wine, technically, so far.
Not me, I'm on my first one. I'm a little behind. Because I joined a cult.
3 shots of NyQuil.
Woo! Yeah!
So, what do you think about, I was thinking, like, it might be funny to say, you know, rectification, proclamation, but then that's a tongue twister and we'd have to say it every week.
Oh, but that'd be kind of fun if we could finally nail it.
That would be fun. On the flip side of that, we could do something very simple, like Flubhub.
I don't like it.
No? Or we could just, you know, pray for forgiveness, ask for repent.
There we go.
We could repent.
Repenting Wednesday. I got nothing. we'll work on this.
Yes. Something about repenting and asking for forgiveness for the incorrect things that we spouted while drinking.
My bad.
Anyways, we'll more to come on that. If you have any suggestions on what you think we should call it, send us an email.
Perfect.
So, a couple of things.
Send it to corrections@faqbadmormons.com.
Hey, listen, we ain't that fancy.
We ain't got that kind of money. We've only made $5.58 so far.
But that means that, you know, we've had 558 plays.
Right? That nearly pays for a quarter of one of these microphones.
You know, I was going to say, I was going to do a little plug at the end that says, you know, hey, share us with your friends so that we can, you know, get more money to pay for all this wine that we're drinking. This wine's not going to buy itself.
Apparently this wine's very expensive. What are we drinking today, Mandy?
We are drinking, let's see, this is the Roth Estate Cabernet Sauvignon 2017 from Alexander Valley in Sonoma County.
Nice. It's delicious. I love it.
Yeah, this one's good. My former roommate in Hawaii worked for a wine distributor, and he would always bring me this one home. It was fucking awesome.
Nice. And Casey, you're on 3 shots of NyQuil. Good job.
Yeah, what are you drinking, Case?
I'm fucking wasted, man. 3 shots of NyQuil? Actually, I took some CBD gummies, Valerian root, melatonin, and NyQuil. My daily go-to-sleep cocktail.
Damn.
You cray-cray.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we do have a couple of corrections from some previous episodes. One of them, thanks to you, Casey, was a little tidbit of information I didn't know. When Mom absconded in the night with us to several polygamous compounds, we were wondering if Dad had called the cops or what had happened. And it turns out, yes, in fact, he did call the cops. Do you want to fill us in on that little correction?
Well, Grandpa Anderson was a deputy sheriff in the county that we were kidnapped from. And, yeah, turns out the cops were looking for us. Because my grandpa was a cop, I think they were kind of under the radar with it. But, yeah, that Mom was hiding the van at an auto body shop, and we weren't allowed to talk to anyone. I remember I got in trouble once for walking over to the fence of the compound and talking to a little boy. And I was a little boy at the time, too, so it wasn't like that.
Wait, so Mom was hiding in her car in an auto wrecking yard, and we were at the polygamist house?
Mm-hmm, yeah, in Lehigh.
Oh, perfect. So makes perfect sense.
She left her children alone with polygamists.
No, she was with us.
Oh, okay.
And her car was hidden in the back of an auto body shop.
Oh.
We weren't allowed to talk to anyone.
I thought you meant she was hiding in her car in the yard, auto yard, and we were, like, alone, unsupervised.
Well, I'm sure we were a lot of the time. But no, she had just stashed the car in an auto body police.
Got it.
Interesting.
Okay.
Because we were on the lam.
Yes. Okay, so that's an important correction. The other correction is not so important, but we were talking about death and dying and how you lose a little bit of your something, soul.
Essence,
whatever it is. And we kept saying 7 ounces. It's actually 21 grams. Mm-hmm. 21 grams, just like the Will Smith movie, where he gets in the bathtub with box jellyfish and dies. Spoiler alert.
I've never seen the movie! Spoiler!
It's like 25 years old.
Yeah, I probably still won't watch it.
Wait, so that 21 grams, is that a real thing?
Yeah. Well, I thought
you said you listened to our podcast, Casey.
I did, but I was like, that's bullshit.
No, I think there's some legitimacy to it.
That's really interesting.
It is interesting.
All right, so let's get into this episode, you guys.
All right.
This is one that we've been wanting to do since the beginning, and it actually took quite a bit of homework this time, instead of our usual just getting drunk and...
Let's reminisce about stupid shit we did.
Exactly, talking story. So this one, just a little bit of a trigger warning for anybody out there who does not want to hear stories that contain child abuse and child rape.
Not that anyone ever wants to hear those stories, but knowing that these stories, or that's involved in these stories with, not us, but with other people, that was very unfortunate.
Yeah, this story does contain a mention of that stuff, so we just want to put that out there in the beginning. It's a very horrible story, very graphic, and true.
The worst thing about all of this is it's completely true.
Yeah. So, and this might be a little bit of a long episode, because now we are going to tell you about our cousin's cult.
Yes.
And we should say this is our second shot.
Oh, yeah.
We tried this a few weeks ago. It went long. Didn't record well.
Right. But you know what? I find that recording things twice sometimes are better, because then we're more... Well, not open. We already know kind of what we're going to say a little bit, so it's a little bit to the point. So it doesn't run quite as long. Hmm.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
So our cousin Tyson would call this a ministry. We are calling it a cult.
Yes.
And hopefully by the time we get done with this episode, we can explain to you why we think that is. So should we get into it?
And we should define our terms a little bit at the beginning, too.
Okay.
When we say prophet, we mean our cousin Tyson. And when we say cult, we mean ministry.
No,
guess you just said that.
He means ministry. We mean cult.
Well, as a member, I mean ministry.
So let's talk about the profit.
Well, here, let's do this first. I think it's a fair thing to say that a lot of people listening probably don't know the history of the Mormon Church, and the history of the Mormon Church is fucking boring. Well, really, almost any history is boring, but this is especially boring. So I don't want to get too much into it. I just would like to put out there that I don't think anybody has put out a better synopsis than our friends Bobby Lopez from Avenue Q, Matt Stone, and Trey Parker, who are famous for their work on Cannibal the Musical.
Oh, yes.
If you haven't heard American Prophet by these gentlemen from the Book of Mormon musical, I highly recommend it. It sums up everything you need to know. Charlotte, you're looking at me like you don't know what I'm talking about.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Nope. Yes, you do.
No, I've seen Orgasmo. I've seen the Book of Mormon. I don't know what you're talking about.
No, it's a song in the Book of Mormon.
Oh, yeah.
The
okay.
American Prophet.
Okay, yeah. I got you. I thought you were saying like it was some other show. I don't know.
So if you haven't seen the Book of Mormon musical or heard the soundtrack, just give it a listen. It tells you everything you need to know about the history of the Mormon Church in a very creative and hilarious way. And it does a way better job than we can do.
Are you going to sing it or?
I really want to. It's one
I'll
of my,
hum a few bars.
It's one of my favorite things. We got to see it in Hollywood at the Pantages Theater, which was so fucking amazing. And then I actually saw it. They traveled toured to Hawaii, and I got to see it 6 times.
Dang,
while
girl.
They were on Oahu.
It was, I was about to say, I was like, I got to see it at the Seagram Center. I can never say it.
The best part about that was my friend Kat actually won the lottery. So if you get there early, you know, you can put your name in for the lottery and be able to sit in the front row.
Right.
And she won it. And nice. So it was her and my friend Tiffany and I. And so we got to share. I sat up front for either the first half or the second half, and then we swapped, and then Tiffany sat up for the other half. It was so cool and such a great time. But yeah, highly recommend if you haven't seen it or heard it. That's the fun way to learn about Mormon history.
The All-American Prophet.
So I think what we should start with is kind of building up the how and why that cults and splinters and sects of the Mormon religion are possible. And I think the easiest way to do that is to talk about the kind of foundation of the religion. And as I was thinking about this, I don't think it's just the Mormon religion. I think this is every religion. Basically, the ability to have a revelation from your, whatever your God or your higher power or whatever it is. This God tells you, hey, this is a thing that we're doing now, and it speaks directly to you, and then you're like, oh, God just told me this thing, and this is what we're doing now in the religion. So it's very convenient for people like Joseph Smith, who perhaps wanted to marry 30-odd adolescent women.
Ew.
Right? God told me that was okay. I just had a revelation. That's cool now.
And that's where revelations come from?
Basically, yeah. I mean, if you want to... A definition of revelation, it's a message, a vision, or actual words from God. Modern day revelation from God continues to be a principal belief of the Mormon faith, but like I said, I think that's true of any religion. It's got to be,
right?
Because how else would it make any sense? It's not like there's a real person.
Well, yeah, I was gonna say, and I really wish Tiffany could have made it on this podcast too, because she was telling us that one of the prophets had some revelation about something or other, and then his wife said she had a revelation.
No, Casey has that story.
Oh, JK, I'm going to let you do it.
No, that was me.
Okay.
No, that was Joseph Smith. His wife was really upset about polygamy, and so she had a revelation saying, I don't remember what it was. It was essentially, basically, God told me I could have a revelation, and you shouldn't marry any more little girls. And then Joseph Smith had a revelation that his wife shouldn't have any more revelations. So there you go.
Was it just his wife? Or was it like all women?
All women, yeah.
No, I think it was just his wife. Actually, that's what makes it funny. It was just his wife. Like, he was like, oh yeah, well, God told me.
Actually, like, God told me you're not allowed.
Exactly.
Yeah. Some super cool revelations that I wrote down from Wikipedia. were obviously polygamy. That's you know, God's command. And then blood atonement is another one that is a really interesting revelation, which I think just started out, from what I can tell, it's like capital punishment. So it just started out as like, hey, if you murder somebody, you're going to get murdered. An eye for an eye sort of thing. And it's been
bastardized,
devolved, revelated, if that's a word.
It is now.
Into this new, well, I wouldn't say new, but some of these fundamentalist sects of the Mormon religion have changed it. So this is what I actually wrote down. It's usually used to punish murder. However, sometimes it's now used for nonviolent crimes like denying or leaving the church or marrying someone of a different race.
Oh, that's nice.
And then I made a big scary face drawing.
Now, that's a religion I can get behind.
Yeah. And so a lot of fundamentalist Mormons believe this. Ugh. I don't know if we really talked about what a fundamentalist Mormon is versus a regular, like, Latter-day Saint Mormon.
I only heard the definition when I started watching Escaping the Faith.
What's Escaping the Faith?
Oh, my God. It's great. It's on A&E. And it's, so there's these two people who left a fundamental Mormon, you know, the polygamists, and so when another girl will email them or be like, we need help out or whatever, we want to leave the polygamists too, then they go in and they help remove them.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of a bullshit show. Like, I don't know how real it is, but, like, some of it seems pretty legit. And one of the reasons I love watching it is, like, that could have been me one day. You know, if Mom had stayed with the polygamist, God knows what would have happened to me. But, like, yeah.
Freaky. That's right. I forgot about that.
But yeah, so Escaping the Faith, and then they talked about fundamental Mormons, and it's like Mormons and fundamental Mormons separated, because fundamental Mormons are the ones who wear their hairs in braids and wears the dresses all the way up to the neck, you know, like turtleneck type things.
To cover the garments.
Yeah, they wear, yeah. And they live in houses that are only a quarter built, so they don't have to pay property taxes on it. Yeah, shit like that. But go on.
Yeah, so I think that the fundamentalist Mormons believe all that creepy old shit that we just kind of talked about, whereas the current version of the church, they had some revelations of their own that says, oh, just kidding, polygamy's actually not cool anymore.
And black people can hold the priesthood.
Exactly.
Black people are okay.
Right.
Exactly. So, you know, having revelations is a pretty key part of this religion. And it gives us a lot of fun stuff to talk about on the podcast. Oh, and I also wrote down, I wanted to tell you guys this fun fact. The idea of blood atonement led to firing squads being allowed in Utah for many years.
Oh.
Even when I was a kid and a teenager and a young adult, firing, like, Utah was one of the only states that allowed the death penalty to be done by firing squad. And I remember thinking that was super weird. And that's why, blood atonement.
Mm-hmm. All right. Interesting.
So. Well, so before Ron Lafferty died of natural causes in the Utah State Prison, because he had been convicted prior to them banishing firing squads, his method of execution was still going to be firing squad. Unfortunately, or fortunately, he died before they got to carry the sentence out.
I'm glad you brought up Ron Lafferty, because he is a character in my next little section that I wanted to outline before we really get into Tyson's church.
Cult.
You,
but,
all right.
Prophet.
Before the prophets.
Are you guys ready for this?
Yeah.
Casey, I think you might be better at talking about this than I am, but I think the next logical step in explaining this whole scenario is defining the one mighty and strong concept.
Okay, so Joseph Smith, I believe it originated with him, but it is the idea that God will send someone down or anoint someone, whoever, whatever, to go forth amongst the faithful and apportion property. Like, I don't know the exact word for it, but basically dole everything out. So if you're FLDS, you believe in what's called, it's essentially communism. It's called the United Order. The Mormons tried it when they came to Utah. FLDS people have been trying it ever since. It's essentially, we all share. And so in a truly, truly, like, legit theocracy, like these people imagine their being on Earth, the one mighty and strong is the one who basically comes in and says, okay, we all share. It's not somebody who says, we all share and I get the big house. It's somebody who says, we all share. We all get what we need. We all take care of each other. And you know, nobody gets to marry all the 14-year-old girls. Everybody just gets their own thing. But, of course, human nature being what it is, we all want to be that guy who was in the McMansion and, yeah, multiple wives, all of that. So it's usually people with a disproportionately large sense of themselves, maybe ego, that claim the title of the one mighty and strong. And then, of course, you know, they're the guy in charge because...
Right, who gets to have all the 12-year-old girls in the fucking...
prophecy or whatever.
And the biggest house.
Yeah, the biggest house. Yeah, yeah. That, I mean, nobody's going to want to share the sweet, giant house and everything else that people want to stroke their egos with.
They're the only one who gets to have the completed house that they pay property taxes on.
Exactly. And maybe the other people pony up the cash for the property tax.
Right. Oh, 100%.
So another thing, this a little more experience I have that we didn't talk about last time with the Polics is I lived in Big Water with Grandma and Grandpa, which is a polygamist community in southern Utah, right by Lake Powell. It was pretty isolated. And so I moved there when I was 13. We spent the winter there. Couple of winters. The first thing I noticed when I moved to the town was there was a big fucking house on a hill, right?
Right.
Well, guess who it belonged to? Oh, I can't remember the guy's name. The dude in charge. Well, you guys should Google Big Water really quick.
I will.
Anyway, so yeah, he had the big house. Everybody who lived in the town had big barbed wire fences around their trailers. And there was so much, like, infighting going on. And, yeah, the main dude, he had the big house on the hill, like, 30 wives with their little houses or whatever. But it was, like, the most tense little town I've ever been to in my life.
Wait, so...
And, of course, the dude in charge was claiming to be the one mighty and strong.
Of course. So, wait, so Grandma and Grandpa had a house there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting.
Did they have anything to do with polygamists?
You know, they always had like a winter house and a summer house.
Right.
Yeah. So their summer house was in Spencer, and that was when we were mining opal. And their winter house, they change it like every other year. For a while, it was Florida. Then they sold that one, and they bought one in Big Water when I was 12 and 13. And then after that, I think they sold that one and moved to Moapa.
I loved the Moapa house. That was awesome. I mean, not the house was any great.
Awesome.
It was just
dirt biking. I think it was the same trailer we had in Big Water. They just picked it up and moved it.
Oh, yeah. No, that would make sense.
You know what's awesome about mining opals? If you... I have such great memories of that Spencer house and being able to take the picks down and chip at the rocks and mine the opals. And I've told that story to people, and they're just like, wait, so you've got a bunch of little kids with pickaxes mining rocks like in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I mean, yeah, but sort of, but it was super fun. So I think about that every time I think of being able to find opals in the rocks. I always think about Indiana Jones.
Yeah. I looked at...
Yeah, don't forget like the dynamite and the caterpillars, the bulldozers and all that.
I don't remember that stuff.
Really good working conditions. I spent a lot more time up there than you guys did, I think.
Yeah, you did, for sure. Okay, so back to the one mighty and strong. Back to the one mighty and strong. Essentially, so this prophecy, or not prophecy. Well, was it a prophecy? What's the difference between a prophecy and a revelation?
I think it was a revelation. So a revelation is something that God tells you.
Ooh.
And a prophecy is something you predict. So if I have a revelation that I'm going to marry the girls next door, even though they're 14. That's like God telling me I can do that. If I have a prophecy, it's saying I'm going to get into a car crash tomorrow.
Got it.
Maybe the prophecy is also a revelation. I think it's future tense versus present tense, maybe?
Important distinction.
Okay, so Alex Joseph...
And by the way, there are no 14-year-old girls next door to where I live.
That's good to
just
know.
Just using that as an apropos example.
So Alex Joseph was an outspoken polygamist founder as mayor of Big Water, Utah. And then I see the second news article is laid-back Big Water mixes gay mayor and polygamists. So...
what?
They're getting progressive.
Back to the one mighty and strong. This is kind of the key... what do you call that? The keystone, the linchpin, the whole...
the glue.
The glue that holds the whole fucking polygamist.
Polygamist together. It's called polygamist now.
It holds the whole fucking polygamist ideological. God damn it.
Nope, keep going.
More wine, Mandy? Sure. Okay. What was I saying?
It keeps it all together.
And if you want to shorten up the podcast by about an hour, just call them polygs. Okay.
Fair enough.
So the polygs.
So the glue. The there is a ton, basically what I'm trying to say, there is a ton of FLDS sects or splinters or just little basically offshoots of each different group, because everybody and their goddamn mother wants to be the one mighty and strong. Sorry, I meant everyone and their father, not mother, because
not
obviously mothers are women and they can't hold any of the magic power.
Right.
So I don't want to get too boring with you guys, but I made a little list of some of the more famous claimants to the title of one mighty and strong.
Pray tell.
It kind of starts out with I wrote... a bunch of old dudes, including Brigham Young. That's my notes. And I'm sourcing Wikipedia on old dudes. And I also was going to source... there's a Deseret News article written by Lee Davidson. It's titled, Several Men Claim to Be the One Mighty and Strong. Some of the claimants to this title, there's a huge long list of it in Wikipedia, and that's only got to be a fraction of the amount of people who are actually claiming it, I'm sure, because people like our cousin Tyson aren't listed in Wikipedia.
Yeah, well, because again, they don't want the government coming down on them.
But spoiler alert, you know, there's a lot of people who think they're this next coming of whatever. I don't.
Second coming?
There's so many words that are going through my head, and I don't really know the right ones to pick, but it's basically, yes, you are the...
chosen one.
You're the chosen one. This thing's been prophesied that you're going to come and you're going to do all this great stuff, and then you're going to be killed, and then you're going to be resurrected. And
like Jesus.
Just like Jesus. Exactly like Jesus. And that's kind of what all these people are claiming to be. So it started out with a bunch of old dudes, including Brigham Young, and then... the old-timer LeBarons in the early 1930s. So I don't know if you guys remember from the other podcast, but the LeBarons were affiliated with the people that Mom took us to live with.
Oh, right.
And that's an Ogden group. And then this kind of... it was hard to keep straight notes because it just, you know, splinters off into different sects and different, like, you know, facets of this group, and then that group splinters off, and then you got 10 offshoots of that group, so it's kind of hard to keep it in order, but the fun ones were basically this guy named Lauren C. Woolley was the founder of the FLDS Short Creek sect, which is Warren Jeffs, okay. Modern-day Warren Jeffs. That was in 1929 when he started that, this guy Lauren C. Woolley, and then Joseph Musser took over that when the government raided that. In 1953, the government raided that, and they arrested a shit ton of people, including 236 kids.
Oh, Jesus.
So imagine, like, we know of the modern day raids on Short Creek and all of that stuff.
Right.
But this happened in 1953, so this has been happening for
ever.
So after that happened, just right before that happened, in 1951, Rulon Allred was appointed the prophet of the Short Creek.
Right.
I forget exactly. I should have written down what the acronym was for their version of the FLDS church. Not that it really matters. But a bunch of the people from that Short Creek Warren Jeffs tribe were like, fuck you, Rulon. We don't want you to be our prophet.
We're going to go to this other one.
Get the fuck out. And so he got the fuck out. And he started his own, which was the Apostolic United Brethren. The AUB, and that's the people that we lived with.
Oh.
So I just kind of wanted to, like, spell that out for you guys.
Let me just say that. The Apostolic United Brethren.
Yeah.
Apostolic.
Wow.
What is an apostolic?
It's like apostle.
Well, I guess apostolic.
Oh, okay.
Apostolic United Brethren.
Fucking stupid.
Yeah. United Brethren Apostle People. And then I wrote, our dudes. Just so I wouldn't forget. And then...
Brad, smiley face.
Yeah. And then after that, it was Ruland Jeffs took over in 1986 until his death in 2002. And then his son, Warren Jeffs, took over it in 2002. And I wrote, new prophet, exclamation point, smiley face.
Well, he's still the prophet.
Yeah.
A lot of those morons still believe that.
So if you don't know the story of Short Creek, we should probably do a whole other episode on that because it could take forever. But basically, this creepy child molester raped a bunch of preteen girls and said he married them and they were his wives, and he went to prison for it, and he's still in prison, and he's
and people still, they just don't believe that young girls, because Escaping the Faith deals with a lot of Warren Jeffs' sect, and they're like, no, he's the prophet, and he didn't do those things that they say he did. He had lots of wives, but they were, you know, older, like 17, you know, not the 12-year-olds.
Yeah.
Even those pictures of him with, like,
Yeah, there's a lot of creepy shit. I don't know if you know anything about that whole thing, Casey.
Not a lot, no.
You're lucky.
Yeah, it's real creepy. That whole Warren Jeff situation is super creepy. We should actually...
Don't look into it.
No. All of these cults are all exactly the same, so...
Right,
you don't
that's
have
true.
To tell me.
Yeah. All right, so boring. Let's get over it and get to the good stuff. How does that involve us?
Well, so that one actually did involve us, which is why I went on that little timeline. But back to some of the other more famous claimants of this one mighty and strong prophecy. So we had the old-timer LeBarons, which we talked about, and then that went off into our thing. Then Joel LeBaron was the third LeBaron to claim it in 1955. In 1967, Everill LeBaron said that he was the guy, not his brother, and he actually had his brother murdered over it. So Everill murdered Joel.
I see.
Yeah, and said, no, just kidding, I'm the one mighty and strong.
I was going to say, that's the one that I saw the murder channel, ID channel did a
totally.
Thing on it.
And these, so the LeBarons and the Rulin All Red people were very close. So then after that, in the 1980s, which is where we start getting close to our little adventure, Frank Miller, I wrote, these are my notes, had cool revelations about the death penalty for adultery and condoning polygamy. That's Wikipedia. And then also in the 80s, we get to Ron and Dan Lafferty and his brothers, and they claim to be collectively the one mighty and strong. So however many brothers there was like five brothers.
So they couldn't decide who gets to be the person, so they said, it's our entire family.
Yeah, they didn't want anyone to get to murder each other over it, so they said, what God actually meant was we are collectively the one
because
mighty and strong.
Because we're of one blood. Andy, can we be the one mighty and strong?
Well, Tyson is going to fight us for that, but we could...
We are part of the
same
family.
Well, maybe we can have that plural definition as well. Could be elected to me.
And then, obviously, I don't need to say this because we've said it a lot, but Ron and Dan Lafferty were convicted... Actually, not both of them. One of them, I think Ron Lafferty, was convicted of murder because...
Murdered his brother's wife.
Yeah, he murdered his brother's wife and infant daughter because... Basically,
she wanted to leave the religion.
It's not that she wanted to leave the religion, because they were regular, normal LDS people.
Well, they wanted to leave the FDLDS.
So, basically, they were regular LDS, and they kind of came up with this School of the Prophets idea. And School of the Prophets is another thing that is a common theme throughout FLDS sects, but basically, it's a thing that Joseph Smith called his study group, essentially.
Weird.
School of the Prophets. So you hear that a lot in these things. And the Laffertys had started this School of the Prophets, and then they started getting into this really weird, culty, FLDS revelation bullshit. And the wife of one of the brothers was an educated woman, and she had just had an infant daughter with this guy. Maybe she was like 18 months old. And she was like, fuck you. You guys are acting like a bunch of crazy people. I'm not subscribing to your bullshit. And so the brother, I think it was Ron Lafferty, murdered her and went to prison. And apparently he died. I thought he was still alive, but I guess he's dead. Casey, did you say that?
He died last year, yeah. And I remember thinking, because it was like a year before they were actually going to carry out the execution.
Aww.
I mean, this was all...
Well, then he couldn't be the one mighty and strong because he needs to be beheaded?
I'm sorry, what?
Oh, sorry. It's like, oh, he couldn't be the one mighty and strong because he has to get beheaded? Is that right? Or fired?
Well, so wait, what you're saying is maybe this all isn't true.
But I'm confused.
find a new religion then.
Okay. I have two more people on my list of interesting people who've claimed to be the One Mighty and Strong. The next one happened in 1983, a man by the name of Art Beulah, who happens to be a friend and used to be a former regular contributor to our cousin Tyson's ministry podcast situation. I thought it was interesting that he's claiming to be the One Mighty and Strong when our cousin is also claiming to be the One Mighty and Strong.
Our cousin is clearly the One Mighty and Strong. Come on, Mandy.
Of course.
The prophet has had revelations specific to Art Beulah.
Okay.
The prophet has said that Art Beulah is not the One Mighty and Strong. And he's got these on his radio show.
I know. Wait, so hold it. Hold that thought, Casey, because I have one more, and then we're going to actually talk about all of that stuff.
Sounds good.
So the last person on the list was somebody in 1997, a man by the name of Brian David Mitchell, who you might remember kidnapped 14-year-old Elizabeth Smart and married her and basically kidnapped her and was raping her for 9 months. She was found a couple of miles from her house, but she had been missing for 9 months. And this dude who, you know, claimed to be this prophet or whatever, kidnapped her, married her, and raped her, along with his wife. His wife was
totally
part of this, too. Yeah. But
By married her, you just mean raped her, right?
Exactly.
Right. Like, yeah, that's not marriage.
No, well, that's what these guys are calling it. That's how they get away with, or how they justify, you know, raping these kids. All the way back to Joseph Smith was they say, oh, they're my wives,
you know.
You
can't rape your wife. I mean, that's an argument that's still happening.
Yeah, and that's why polygamy became a revelation, because Joseph Smith wanted to bang a bunch of 14-year-olds.
Just let's get real. They were young.
It opens the door to a lot of possibilities.
Exactly.
All right. So can we talk about the prophet already?
Yeah, so I know. I realized that was a lot, but I didn't want to just jump right into it without giving some sort of background, because
just saying your cousin's psycho is not funny.
I mean, it is funny, but this way at least we have some substance to base the rest of our story on, which is the good part of the story and the part of the story that we've been wanting to tell about our cousin, who goes by the name of Mark Lichtenwalter. We knew him growing up as Tyson. And I just want to preface this by saying I felt a little bit guilty and a little bit weird about talking shit publicly until I started doing research on him yesterday.
Okay, 'cause I was going to say, he's our cousin. We don't have a huge relationship with him by any means, but I do feel shitty talking shit about him. But then again, it's not like we made these decisions. We didn't do these things I feel weird about it, but go on, because I didn't do any research, and I'd love to hear why I should feel less shitty about it.
Yeah, I feel a little bit guilty, because it's just, you know, a natural thing. You don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. You know, this is somebody that you're related to, that you spent some time with growing up, and I started digging in, and this man is a public figure, a very public figure. He's got a website, The Latter-day Kingdom. He's got Kingdom of God or Nothing podcast that's got 462 episodes, 32,000 listens that was updated last 2 years ago. He's got a Fundamentally Mormon podcast with 290 episodes, a Fundamentally Mormon YouTube with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of videos that's current, that's still being updated today. He's got a Facebook page called, spoiler alert, School of the Prophets, and then... Yeah, so basically he's got a ton of content out there, and he's still updating it, and he's still preaching this, and still basically claiming that he is a prophet and this One Mighty and Strong. So okay. I don't feel bad anymore, because I feel like if he didn't want to sound like a crazy person, he should stop putting a fuck ton of crazy shit out there on the internet. Is that fair?
You're not saying anything that he's not saying 400 times, right. And you're just jealous because he's got more views than you do on Facebook.
So fucking many more.
So jealous.
32,000 listens? Think of how many bottles of wine he could buy with that.
Does he drink wine?
I mean...
Wait. Is it a penny a listen?
Well, it's a penny and a half.
Is it? Because I feel like we have...
Penny and a half.
We have a lot of listens.
That's like $300 worth of wine, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Which Mandy has easily spent this week.
Yeah.
So, like, subscribe, and share.
We'd like some more wine, please.
All right, let's talk about it. We've done our homework. We've set the stage. Let's talk about our cousin Tyson. He will henceforth be referred to as the prophet.
Is that with an F or a PH?
Ooh. PH. But F's funny. So I'm trying to think about how this all got started. I was living in Hawaii, and I think, Casey, you called me, and you were like, holy shit, there's some crazy shit going on. Listen to this podcast. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah. It was entertaining for a while.
And so we started getting the rest of the siblings on the conference calls, and we would kind of listen to them together and be like, what the fuck is this crazy shit?
Right. Yeah, it was a little out there.
I don't really remember listening to a lot of them. I listened to a couple, and honestly, I was so bored I couldn't do it. And then you guys told me Mom was on an episode, so I clearly had to listen to that one. But even that one, I was still just like, what the shit is happening?
Well, let's start at the beginning. So Casey, when we recorded last time, which didn't get saved, you were telling us that you had some inside knowledge about Tyson's original revelation that told him he was the One Mighty and Strong.
Oh, you don't know the story of the original revelation? My cousin Tyson, who I grew up with, I mean, the prophet who I grew up with, I think it's fair to say that we both had kind of a troubled childhood, which is why we spent so much time living with our grandparents. So when he was about 17, he was continuing on with the troubled childhood, and he had a vision one night that, this is me not talking shit, this is just recounting what the prophet said. He had a vision where he went into this room in the Salt Lake Temple called the Holy of Holies. And so there is a room in the Salt Lake Temple called the Holy of Holies. And it's a room that no one, not even dues-paying Mormons, are allowed to go into. Unless you're like way high up in the organization, like the president and maybe a couple other dudes get to go in there, right?
I've heard about this secret room.
So Tyson had a vision. I mean, the prophet had a vision. He went in there. He wrote a letter afterward, and he described going into this room, and he sent it off to the then president of the Mormon Church. I forget the guy's name.
Kimball.
The guy wrote him a letter back, and Tyson still has the letter, and he's like, yes, you're right. This is what this looks like. How do you know that? And Tyson went to the Mormon Church office building and talked with the leadership. So something happened. Or I guess, I don't know. But in any case, that's what got him going. He got a little bit of, a spiritual experience out of it. Mm-hmm. He got to rub elbows with the higher-ups. And, so that was the beginning of it, as far as I know. And from there, he started his own, what do you want to call it, splinter group? Religion?
Sect. Splinter group, yeah, exactly.
Sect. I like sect. He started his own sect. He became the One Mighty and Strong. He had another revelation where God told him he's the One Mighty and Strong.
Of course he did.
If I had a revelation, God would probably tell me just to, like, go and make dinner. But no, my cousin gets to be the One Mighty and Strong. I never get anything.
So yeah, from humble beginnings, that's how our cousin was informed by the Lord Almighty himself that he was the One Mighty and Strong. And he began to, what's the word for, it's not proselytize, but when you're a prophet and you're saying prophet words.
Proselytize, I like
it. I think proselytize is fair. He's been proselytizing ever since.
Yeah, so he started his own church. He calls it a ministry. He's got his own ministry. He preaches. He does these, I'm not even kidding with you guys, hundreds of podcasts and videos and all this shit, trying to put his content out in the world. He baptizes people in swimming pools. So he's a long-haul truck driver, and so he drives around, and that's when he does a lot of his recording. But he actually said on one of his podcasts that he, you know, will pull over, and if he comes to a town where some of his followers want to be baptized into his church, he'll take them to the pool at the motel and give them a little dunk.
And full disclosure, our mom and is that one our stepdad?
I guess technically.
Our mom and her husband are both baptized members of Tyson's ministry.
Oh, God, I didn't know they actually did that.
I mean, but really, what is a baptism anyways?
Well, I want to say, too, like Charlotte mentioned earlier, Mom was on an episode of the podcast, which was a very, very disturbing episode. They were just, you know, bantering and laughing and talking and...
like we are right now.
Exactly. The prophet was saying how he was going to get a tattoo on his neck that said, cut here. And
our mother laughed. Yeah, might as well, because you're dead.
I can't wait for the day that you die, Tyson. I don't mean it to sound like that, but I can't wait for the day when you die. And she was fully encouraging this and participating in it. And I would like to just go out and say now has redacted her position on Tyson's ministry. At least that's what she told me the last time that I spoke to her, because I was kind of giving her shit about it. She's like, well, I thought that he was, but it turns out he wasn't. And I was like, you fucking think?
Also, Mom likes to redact a lot of things.
That's true. We'll put this into the bookshelf of her life of religion she's joined. Sorry, Mom. Love you. I did want to mention one thing that I remember about some of our conference calls when we had all the siblings on the phone listening to some of the podcast episodes. There was one point when it started, I think it was the one that Mom was on, but there was some point when it just started to getting super fucking weird, and we were all basically, and this sounds really shitty to admit, but I'm going to admit it, we were all making bets on how soon it was that somebody was going to die or somebody was going to get murdered.
Yeah. You're all like, okay, I do, I remember
now
that.
Now that you brought up those bets, yeah. Let's revisit that for a second, because who had the long bet? Because mine was like 2 years tops.
I can't remember.
I did 6 months. I remember that.
But we were all of us were like, this is fucked up. Like, something bad's going to happen.
I owe Tiffany $5. I'm pretty sure Tiffany had the long bet.
She should have come on the podcast tonight.
I never win anything. Yeah, she should have. And she'd get her $5 from 5 years ago.
But we're never going to tell her.
The long odds were like 2 years out.
Right.
And this has to be like at least, I don't know how long ago. I was working for Rachel's dad, so, like, geez, 8 years ago?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
The prophets had a good run.
Yeah, for real. But, you know, it's kind of, like, it's kind of cavalier of us or whatever. I don't know if that's the right word, but it was kind of funny and kind of a joke.
Well, when you have this brand of horseshit stuffed down your throat your whole life, you have to kind of take a cavalier attitude, right? I mean, otherwise, it's like, what do you do, laugh or cry? You're surrounded by crazy people.
Right.
That's true.
No offense.
But the reason, I feel like the reason why I'm a little, like, you know, cringy about it now is because, like, some really bad shit did end up happening, and
but no one got murdered, was the bet.
That's true. No one did get murdered, but some really terrible shit did happen, and that's one of the reasons why our cousin the prophet is no longer as public of a figure as it used to be, because he started getting death threats from a lot of people because...
Pray tell, Mandy, why did he get death threats?
Because of a little organization called the Knights of the Crystal Blade.
Ew, it sounds ominous.
It's, I read a lot of articles about this. You've heard about this, right, Casey?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so I read this KUTV interview. It's a Salt Lake City news station that basically outlines the horrible shit that happened from these two guys that used to be in the Prophet Tyson's church. So basically these two guys, Samuel Schaefer and John Alvin Coltharp, were part of Tyson's cult, right? Tyson's ministry, whatever you want to call it. And they did their school of the propheting, and they did their polygamy sex heaven, and they did whatever kind of weird shit they do in that church. I don't know what it is. These two guys, according to the prophet, Tyson, kind of went off and started to do their own thing, and they started their own sect called the Knights of the Crystal Blade. And because of our cousin's affiliation with these two guys, this is why he started getting death threats, even though... So these two guys did some really bad shit, which I'm going to get into, even though...
He technically wasn't involved in it.
He wasn't involved in it. He says that he parted ways with them long before they ever...
No, he didn't just part ways. He excommunicated them from his religion.
That's true. Let's tell it like it is.
And when I said religion, I really wanted to say cult.
I feel like they're kind of interchangeable at this point.
That's fair.
So this article says... This little segment of the article is titled The Dungeons and Dragons of Mormon Fundamentalism. They basically give our cousin, the prophet, this interview because he needs to clear his name because he's about ready to get his fucking ass kicked. He talks about...
I read it the other way, Mandy. I kind of thought Tyson was still chasing after attention at this point. He's like,
we might be now. Right?
Actually, you know, it might...
Was it not like that?
It might be. I don't know. The way that the article reads is basically like, no, he's like, please don't kick my ass. And I read a bunch of Reddit threads, too, where all these people were like, we're going to fucking get you, child molesting piece of shit.
So I knew that something fucked up had happened. I think I had heard that two guys had married each other's daughters. I didn't hear any of the details of it. And I was just like, well, that's fucked up. And I knew they weren't of age, but didn't know what age they were. And so when we went to Grandma's funeral recently, like in the last year, we were in the presence of the prophet. And I somehow ended up talking to him for a little bit of time. And like, we had already made fun of his podcast quite a bit, so I knew he was nuts. But we started talking and he's just like, oh, you know, what do you do for a living and blah, blah, blah. And so we started talking and I was like, oh, well, you know, a lot of what I do is online. And I mean, not, my job is not online, but I have a lot of promotion online. And he's just like, oh, well, I don't really do Facebook anymore because I had to quit because of the death threats. And I'm just like, because he wanted to talk about the death threats. He wanted nothing more than to talk about his religion and that he was... had talked with newspaper at some point. And I'm just like, oh, really? What are you talking about? And I kind of played dumb. And he was just like, yeah, you know, I have a religion. I excommunicated them. I did that. But they had done these terrible things. And now people are really mad at me, even though my religion had nothing to do with it. I'm like, oh, okay, cool, Tyson. I gotta go. Like, I'll see you later. That was it. Pretty much. I'm like, how did you... Where's Manny and Casey? Why'd you fucking leave me? Where did you run off to?
Casey?
We're here, Charlotte.
No, at the funeral. I'm like, God damn it. Like, how did I get stuck in this conversation?
Casey had high-centered his car somewhere in the snow, leaving you to talk to the prophet alone.
Good time.
That was a good time.
All right. So, what did these two men that were excommunicated from Tyson's church do, pray tell? Well, let me tell you, and this is where the fucking earlier warning came about. So these two guys, Samuel Schaefer and John Alvin Coltharp, were founders of a religious group called the Knights of the Crystal Blade. They made international news when they were accused of marrying each other's daughters, ages 7 and 8, to start a new society in the desert to wait out the apocalypse.
So gross.
Exactly. Coltharp pleaded guilty to child bigamy and sodomy. Schaefer pleaded guilty to child rape and child abuse. Both are currently serving sentences of 26 years to life in prison.
It's disgusting.
Hope they're enjoying that time in prison.
I'm going to regret asking this question, but what is the difference between sodomy and rape?
It's butt stuff.
Oh, okay. That's what I kind of thought.
Yeah.
That's Which fucked up.
And it, that doesn't seem like a Jesus-y thing to do.
No, I was going to say, your whole purpose is to repopulate your fucking community and you're doing butt stuff with a fucking 7-year-old. Like, I literally want to punch... I can understand why Tyson got fucking death threats. Mm-hmm. I'm fucking... so fucking gross.
Yeah. So he's affiliated now with these people, and there's a ton of people on Reddit who are basically calling for his head and outing him and... You know, so he shuts down all of his websites. Like, a lot of his stuff is defunct now. If you go to links, you can't find it. But I've been given a lot of links by my friends from archive internet website host places. That those words didn't really go together the way I
struck it.
Your whole point is go out and repopulate the world. butt stuff with a 7-year-old.
Right. No, it's fuck you. You know, you deserve to fucking, I would just say die in prison, but you should just be tortured endlessly.
So let me
only hope.
Right.
Let me read you a little bit more from this article. So this talks about our cousin, the prophet. It says that he pays his bills as a truck driver, but his passion is preaching Mormon fundamentalism. Like other fundamentalists, he believes that mainstream LDS church has become too worldly and has lost its way, and after it rejected the foundational doctrines, like its belief in polygamy and the Adam God doctrine. Oh, there's that thing again, Adam God doctrine.
Right.
We tried to talk about that on an earlier episode. And I tried to Google it, and it was so fucking boring. That's one of the reasons that Mom left and took us to live with the polygamists. Her and Jamie were debating that. Anyways, sorry. Memories.
I just can't believe that I've already heard the story, and I was disgusted by it the first time. And I'm equally as fucking disgusted the second time when there's a little bit more information I didn't know. Oh, I just... and so want to punch people.
Yeah, it's horrible. And the kid's mother was looking for them, too. Like, he had two daughters. And there's a part in the article that I read where he essentially hid them in a barrel outside of a trailer wherever they were living in the middle of winter with no, like, winter clothes on, and hid them out there overnight. And when the cops finally found them, they said that they were obviously cold, dehydrated, and hungry, but they were otherwise unharmed. But there was, like, a big Amber Alert. There was, like, a whole situation.
They hid them in a barrel.
Yeah. So that the mom couldn't find them.
What a piece of shit.
For real.
What's wrong with people?
For real. So this article basically goes on to kind of, it's our cousin the prophet basically telling them what his beliefs are and how he, you know, doesn't have anything to do with these guys. He doesn't actually say excommunicated in the article. Luckily, he used those words with Charlotte in person so that we could tell all of you guys that he said it. But yeah, that's kind of it. It's, you know, he says he has nothing to do with it. I really fucking want to believe he has nothing to do with it, because could you imagine, like, somebody that you know that you're related to growing up did some shit like that? Like, fuck, man.
Yeah.
Anyways, religious cults are dangerous. I actually, when I was done, so I did a lot of this research last night, and I was very disturbed by what I read, obviously. There's a lot of fucking horrible shit. But I mean, like, this has been a long episode, but so imagine all of the, like, legwork that you have to do to go all the way back into, like, Joseph Smith times. And so basically I was inundated with a lot of shit. And so at the very, kind of like, as the closing to kind of wrap it all up, sort of Google search, I did, what makes a cult leader dangerous?
Oh, that's a good question.
And that was fun because I was like, I don't want to think that my cousin, the prophet, with his own ministry, is a dangerous cult leader. I want to think he's just a regular cult leader. But it led me to a couple of different Psychology Today articles, which I thought were really interesting, and it totally reminded me of you, Casey, because it's one of the quotes that I pulled out of there. It said, "This illustrates the reason why cult leaders are often dangerous, because they're pathologically narcissistic or sociopathic." Mm-hmm. And I was like, dude, and I know that that's something, Casey, that you and I have talked about several times, basically having a narcissistic personality disorder. And exactly. So I was just like, Casey knows what the fuck he's talking about. He's the smartest brother I have.
Aw, thanks.
But I thought
narcissism, yeah, it runs deep in our family. I mean, if you look at...
me? No, yeah, wait.
we get a lot of, like, people who are completely detached from reality because of narcissism.
Yeah.
Well, it runs deep.
It's another thing that makes them dangerous, being extremely charismatic. Because, well, I don't know if I'd qualify Tyson as extremely charismatic.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far.
Usually, like, people who found their own religions are, like, really charismatic, like, really narcissistic.
Yeah, there's this whole, I actually saved this article, too. It has way too many bullet points, but it's a Psychology Today article. Let me see if I can pull it up real quick.
But yeah, they say that about mass murderers, too. Like, Ted Bundy is super charismatic, and, you know, I I'm sure Charles Manson, also very charismatic. I mean, how else do you convince other people to murder people for you?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
also like, have exact, absolutely no
group.
Oh, so many, right? And yeah. Also to have zero empathy for other people. I mean, it's a lack of empathy, and I feel like that's rampant nowadays, more so than it's been in the past.
Well, isn't that a facet of narcissism?
Like, oh, absolutely.
You're elevated above everyone else. So, like, maybe you care what they think a little bit, but mostly it's all about you.
Exactly, totally. Yeah. So some of the traits from this article, from the Psychology Today article that talks about like sociopathic narcissists. Number one, there's 50 of them, so I'm not going to read them all, but number one, has a grandiose idea of who he is and what he can achieve. Number two, is preoccupied with fantasies of unlimited success, power, and brilliance. Number three, demands blind, unquestioned obedience. Number four, requires excessive admiration from followers and outsiders. Number five, has a sense of entitlement, expecting to be treated as special at all times. And it basically goes on and on and on like that, which I was like, interesting. That's very, it seems like a very familiar, accurate portrayal of a lot of personalities that I can think of.
Yeah.
I also thought another really kind of interesting thing, it led me to another link for another article, and it was basically like, here are some people who exhibit those types of personality traits. Jim Jones, David Koresh, you know, David Koresh from the Branch Davidians, Charles Manson, Warren Jeffs, Bhagwan Rajneesh. That's hard to say. But he was one. Marshall Applewhite from the Heaven's Gate cult. And Donald Trump exhibits these characteristics as well, which I thought was an interesting just little plug into the end of all these obviously like psychological terrorist cult leaders. Anyway.
So that's been fun.
Steve Jobs.
Steve Jobs wasn't on the list.
Oh, that was actually a compiled list that you didn't make yourself.
No, I did not make that up. That was in a Psychology Today article. Like, Donald Trump was listed as in the same realm as David Koresh and the Bhagwan Rajneesh.
Yet people...
Oh, and Charles Manson. Don't forget him. So, yeah. You know what's another kind of funny story relating to the prophet's ministry? I went to the Big Island with our friend Deborah from the co-op, and we... Mm-hmm. She invited me over there because she was there for work, and we just stayed overnight, and I was like, oh, hey, you got to check this out. And I played one of the episodes. I'm pretty sure it was the episode that Mom was on, because that's the one that's just made me lose my shit. But I was like, listen to this. And it, you know, his episodes are like really fucking long.
Like 4 hours, right?
Really long. Not 4 hours, but really long. And we stayed up the whole, way too late the whole night. She was just like, eyes wide. She's like, what the fuck? This is your cousin? And I was like, yeah, dude, it's my cousin. She's like, this is fucked up. I was like, I know.
No fun and games until somebody gets murdered.
So or somebody gets a blood atonement.
Is there any other any other tidbits we want to drop? Any knowledge bombs we want to drop on the world about our cousin the prophet?
He has a really sweet tattoo.
No, I can't. I'm a tattooed person. The code of tattooed people is you cannot make fun of somebody else for their shitty tattoos, because we've all had shitty tattoos.
100%, but we cover them when we realize that they're shitty tattoos.
Maybe he's poor. He's got a lot of kids. He doesn't have money to get his tattoos covered up.
You can just take it from the tithing.
What do you mean expensive hobby?
Listen, making fun of people's tattoos is off limits.
All right, fine. Then no, I have nothing more to say about the prophet.
I got nothing to.
So if you have any stories about any of your family members starting a cult,
or maybe your cousin or brother or sisters, is the prophet.
They have to have peni.
I'd love to hear about it.
Send us your stories.
Come on, nobody else has a crazy family, just us.
There's got to be somebody out there. There's
got to be somebody out there.
And if you're out there listening right now, send us your stories at fhebadmormons@gmail.com. We really hope that we're not the only people stuck in this multiverse. Thanks for coming on, Casey.
Thanks, Casey.
You're our first sibling who's come on to talk shit with us.
I'm a guest star.
You are a guest.
And I have so many. I have so many more stories that I want to talk about with you. So you're gonna have to come back on again. Okay.
Sounds good. All right.
All right. Well.
Good night, guys.
Good night,
Casey.
You have been spending your evening with us at Family Home Evening with Bad Mormons.
We'll try not to, you know,
do have nightmares tonight.
Right, I was going to say, I don't have anything good to say. I'm done.
Try not to have nightmares. We're sorry that we told you this horrible shit, but if we have to know it.
It's fucking out there and watch your kids.
Yeah, if we have to know it, you have to know it. And if you're ever bored, just Google Mark Tyson Trent Lichtenwalter and there's a fuck ton of information online that you can find out about him and his ministry, and I'm sure he would love to tell you all about it. I think his phone number is even out there, so.
Wow.
I don't recommend it, though.
And if anyone out there gets a vision that they're the one mighty and strong, try to entertain the idea that maybe it's coming from your own head and not from our divine creator.
Yes! 100%.
All right, I'm out. Good night.
Good night. Casey. Well, I'm Charlotte.
I'm Mandy.
And that was Casey.
We're bad Mormons, but we're not as bad as some other Mormons we know.
We'll never be as bad as fucking fundamental Mormons.
And with that, I'm gonna drop the mic.